Forks and Spoons, Knives and Other Cutlery. I'm your host, Christina.
And I'm Tori.
And this is episode 13 of Cullin' the Shots, the podcast where we reminisce on the good old Twilight days. Yay! Woo! Yay! Woo! So we have yet another quiz for our icebreaker. We are very, very, very seriously running out of content for just, you know, the intro of our pod. The one that Tori chose for today's episode, though, is called "This is the worst Twilight quiz you'll ever take in your life. I promise."
I'm so excited.
And looking at the first question that shows up, I'm already questioning how this is going to go. So would you like to read the first question or statement, I guess?
Yeah. Okay. All right. Your significant other's parents are coming over for dinner for the first time. Pick something to serve them. Burnt pie. Bedazzled bass. Like the fish, you know, gemmed out fish. We love it. Toast on beans. Not beans on toast. Toast on beans. Mm-hmm. Banana dog with Heinz ketchup included. Rock and roll raw chicken. Or floor cake.
Oh my god, that chicken has like studs all over it.
The Alexander McQueen chicken. I'm gonna go for burnt pie because I've actually cooked one of those before. It turned out very well.
What's a burnt pie?
Just a pie that I burnt. I left it in the oven a little too long.
So when I first looked at the question, I thought there were only four options. I didn't realize there would be six. So the rock and roll raw chicken really caught me off guard. Floor cake seems to be something that I probably would do on accident. Cake, I make a cake and it falls on the floor and I'm just like, well, here we are. So I'll pick a floor cake. Next is pick a terrible vampire power. And the options are allergic to clothes, involuntarily screaming at daylight, legs of a bat, can only read negative thoughts, can't touch metal, or garlic cloves for fingers.
I'm gonna have to go for involuntarily screaming at daylight because I honestly do that now as a human.
That makes me wonder, is it just, so it is involuntary, but does that mean it's also like at random?
I guess, or it's just constant screaming just whenever we see sunlight.
They have to be hidden away, but if they see any sign of sunlight, they start screaming. If they're allergic to clothes, does that just mean they don't wear, they're naked all the time?
Yeah, you're just naked all the time. You're like a wolf.
Naked all the time. Oops, I accidentally hit legs of a bat.
All right, well, you got legs of a bat.
I'm imagining like a human-sized torso and then legs of a bat. Okay, what's next?
Okay, if you had to be a non-Twilight mystical creature, which would you be? A reverse mermaid, a scary fawn, a huge snake, an ice zombie, the Loch Ness Monster, or this dude? I don't know who this dude is, but he has pointy ears and red eyes and some gnarly teeth. He's pretty gross looking.
I don't know what a gremlin looks like, but I feel like that's what a gremlin looks like. Yeah,
that's pretty close. I like the reverse mermaid. I think the thought of having a fish head and just some people legs is comical, so.
Well, mine is a vampire with bat legs, so. I'm torn between the ice zombie and the huge snake. Let's go with ice zombie. Pick a new perfume you must wear at all times. Oh, gosh. This sounds like, what's it, the Jelly Bean game?
The Bean Boozled.
Bean Boozled, there you go. Sounds like.
Ooh, it does.
So the options are, you can smell like sweaty cheese, a porta potty, hot trash, rotting fish, a skunk, or mold.
I'm going to go for skunk because then I'll just smell like weed, I guess. That's probably what I smell like now anyway, so.
Some of these smells I feel like are like hard to tell the difference of. Like I feel like they would be. What does hot trash smell like? I have never
like
been.
Like New York in the city time or in the summer in the city time. New York in the summertime. That smell of the sidewalk, you know.
New York in the city time. I mean.
Dude, what is sweaty cheese?
That's what I'm wondering. What does sweaty cheese smell like? I'm also like, what does mold smell like? Like cheese?
I don't know.
I'm going to pick mold. Not because I would want to smell like mold. I just,
That's probably the least offensive.
Yeah, I feel like it's the lesser of all the evils.
Okay. Oh, this is a nice question. If you had to be a fish, what kind would you be? A goldfish, a blue tang, a swordfish, a hairy frogfish, a catfish, or a southern fried fish plate? I'm going to go for swordfish because he looks cool jumping out of the water with a horn.
I'm going to go with a catfish. Okay. Pick a Twilight quote. The options are, you better hold on tight, spider monkey. Don't worry about the bears, Bella. My kung fu is strong. I don't even remember who says that. Dude, you really don't want to start comparing stinks. I can read every mind in this room apart from yours. There's money, sex, cat. I'm nearly 110. It's time I settled down. And then the last one is, vampires play baseball?
All right, I'm going to go for it. Dude, you really don't want to start comparing stinks.
I'm surprised you didn't go for the money, sex.
That was a close second. That's a good one.
I guess these are quotes from the movie.
I guess so.
I'm going to do with the money, sex, cat.
Pick a random number. 1, 20, 42, 69, 117, or 1,289. Wow. I'm going to go for 42.
I'm going to go with 20.
Oh no, what did you get?
So I got Chesme, a combination of Charlie and Esme. It says, you're a really caring person who people often see as the mom and dad of the group. You might not always have the right words to say, but people know you have a lot of heart. But the photo is kind of disturbing. But it's Esme's like face, but then like Charlie's from like his nose down, so it has like the iconic mustache. Do you see it?
No. That looks terrifying. Why is Charlie paler than Esme?
I don't know.
Is Charlie a vampire?
It might have been from the the first Twilight movies photos, because they were pretty pale in that series.
Yeah,
but yeah, that's mine.
Mine's bad.
Oh no, who'd you get?
I got Renesse Sam.
Oh.
Renesmee plus Sam equals Renesse Sam. That's three names in one. You are a fearless leader who people are inexplicably drawn to, but the picture is just Sam with Renesmee's eyes and hair. It's terrifying. You see it?
I should not have taken a drink of water.
It's terrifying.
Ew. Are you sure those are Renesmee's eyes?
I don't know. What else are they? I don't know. It's freaky because I can't tell exactly what's supposed to be who. It's very like uncanny valley. I don't like it.
Like, okay, so his nose and his mouth for sure belong to Sam's, but the eyes.
Freaky. I don't like it.
And they're so close up to the eyebrows. So I'm like, even more confused.
I know. Isn't it like freaky? Like it almost looks like a real person, but like not quite.
Like if Sam put a wig on.
Yeah.
Or a Dry longer Queen wig Sam. On. Oh my goodness. Well, that was the quiz.
That was something.
That was the quiz.
That was not the worst one I've ever taken. That was great.
Yeah. I mean, if anything, I think the quiz we took in our last episode or the previous one was worse.
Yes.
Worse because we were not quite sure how to answer those questions.
We were very confused.
So confused. But now that leaves it up to the rest of this episode, which is dedicated to our review and thoughts of the Eclipse movie. Woo! If you weren't already familiar with what happens in the book, which is what the movie is based off of, you can listen to the previous three episodes that we put up, which would be episodes 10 through 12.
The one.
Yep, that sounds about right. I guess starting with initial thoughts about the movie. What were your thoughts after watching the movie again?
Oh, I don't know. Let's see. I don't know if you feel this way, but I like enjoyed watching this movie more than I did reading the book. Like, I was annoyed that they left out so much stuff, and I was very confused. If I hadn't read this book, I would be very lost watching this movie, but I didn't get that same anger that I got while reading it, and it was very much appreciated.
Mm-hmm. I was gonna say, I was telling Tori this before we even recorded this episode or press record on the episode, but I watched the movie for the first time in a while. And for a moment, I thought to myself, did I watch this movie before? Like, I couldn't remember. Up to the beginning, up to the tent campground scene, I could not remember the order that the movie went in. But I also did notice that, like, it was, I guess, less emotionally frustrating. Like, the movie itself was less emotionally frustrating than the book. But if you didn't read the book, there were a lot of details in the movie that you like wouldn't know how exactly they fit together or why.
And there were some things that even like genuinely wouldn't even make sense. Like some of the dialogue, like her just randomly shouting, "Okay, I'm Switzerland." Mm-hmm. If you didn't read the book, I'd be like, what the fuck does that mean? She's Switzerland? What?
What? And even when they disclosed when Jacob told Bella about like the imprinting thing, like there's a weird pause before Jacob finally like goes into talking about what imprinting is. And I'm like, that's not really how it went in the book, I think.
Yeah, no, it wasn't.
But I know what you mean when you said that the movie didn't make you feel as like angry as the book had, I guess. But I don't really know if that's a good or bad thing.
Because who are you supposed to be angry at? Jacob? They kind of want you to like Jacob.
I guess. I wasn't even like angry at Bella, which was weird.
I know. I feel like the movie, as I was watching it, I found that Edward's character was more annoying in the movie and Jacob's character was like slightly more likable. And I think they did that to like even the playing fields a little bit. So Team Jacob people get their piece. Team Edward people get their piece. And it's still like a competition between them, you know? Which it's not like, obviously she's going to pick Edward because there is no competition. I think they're trying to make Jacob seem a little better, Edward seem a little crazier.
And I did notice that because they like left out some of the details in the movie compared to the book, Edward doesn't get his like redemption arc where like he does all this stuff in the beginning to prevent Bella from going to the reservation to see Jacob or the rest of the wolves because he doesn't trust them. But in the book, eventually he's like, okay, Bella, I like trust your judgment. You can go to La Push. But then in the movie, like, that's just never addressed. They're always constantly like, I don't trust you, except for like the tent scene when Edward lets Jacob act as a human heater.
Yeah, I agree. That's really annoying, and it really like changes Edward's character. Mm-hmm. It takes away a lot of his dignity in a way.
Yeah, like I said, I watched the first half of the movie and really could not remember if I'd even seen it before.
I agree. Me too.
Like, I remember the tent scene or the like little camp area scene, which is like closer towards the end of the movie, but for some reason the whole beginning of the movie, maybe the graduation when Jessica does her speech, I remembered like a bit and piece of. But yeah, the movie as a whole, I could not remember. I couldn't remember much of it, but it's fine. I watched it twice just to make sure.
I completely forgot that they did that whole like Charlie looking for Riley subplot, which I thought was weird because if Riley went missing in Seattle, why is the chief of police in Forks, Washington looking for him?
Yeah, and I had questions about Riley's character and like how he was portrayed or added into the movie. Like, obviously in the book, you know that Riley is the stand-in companion for Victoria in order to put together this vampire newborn army, which is like the whole conflict of the book. Except for the way that they introduced Riley in the very beginning of the movie, it's a scene where he gets kidnapped and assumingly turned into a vampire by Victoria. Except for later on, as the movie continues, you realize that Riley's been missing for over a year. And in my head, I was like, does that make sense that he was missing for over a year, meaning Victoria was planning this over a year ago?
No, that literally doesn't make sense, considering like the entire Twilight saga takes place over like 2 years, right?
Yeah, so I was very confused that they stated that Riley was missing over a year ago. And also when Edward and Seth have their standoff against Riley and Victoria, Edward tries to convince Riley that, you know, Victoria doesn't love him, that she's using him, and says that Riley's from Forks, and that's the only reason why Victoria was interested in him. But I thought he was from Seattle.
Yeah.
I mean, it's possible that maybe, you know, had some connection to Forks and then moved to Seattle later in life when he grew up. But, like, I don't know. In my head, I was just under the impression that Riley, you know, was from Seattle, hence why he was missing.
Seattle. I didn't get that.
But yeah, there's that. I mean, we'll probably talk more about it later. But yeah, what were your general notes for the movie?
It just bothered me that some of the, like, major things they left out were things that were actually very plot driven. Like the fact that they completely left out why Rosalie saved Emmett. They completely left out the whole Vera and her little baby thing, and that's the only reason she saved Emmett. She's all, oh, I just want to grow old with Emmett. You wouldn't have Emmett if you weren't a vampire, first off. But, like, little things like that. Or also, this is completely unrelated. Sorry, my brain's like, ooh.
No, but, it's okay.
Did they, in the books, reference, like, the Volturi being in Washington before they showed up in the clearing? Because the Volturi is just, like, watching over the destruction in Seattle, and I'm very confused as to why they allow that to happen. Jane's just like, let them think that we're not doing anything. Why?
I wrote in my notes, I said, okay, but what was the point in the Volturi being in this movie at all? And I meant, like, you know, before they finally meet the Cullens in the clearing after the battle has ended. I have no idea why they just were, like, sprinkled into the movie beforehand. Especially the part where, I can't remember which of the Volturi member said it to Jane, but was basically saying that, like, if they don't do anything, people are going to doubt the Volturi's, like, authoritativeness and just, like, their stance and being, like, the higher power in the vampire world. And I'm like, yeah, you guys are doing nothing. Like, they're just watching this destruction. Yeah. So I have
no
idea.
And she's just like, let them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
why?
She's like, let,
like,
them,
what's the point? Like, why? Why chaos do you want them to think that?
What was the point of that?
I will say Dakota Fanning is phenomenal. She's such a good actress, but...
Yeah, they didn't mention the Volturi in the book, you know, before they show up after the Cullens and the wolves defeat the newborn army. So it's very confusing. Like, obviously there's a lot of paranoia within the Cullens that they're like, well, we need to make sure that the Volturi don't come here. But, like, they were already in Seattle, yeah, according to the movie. So I'm like, I don't understand. It also, again, took them so long to figure out that it was Victoria who was the main person, you know, causing all the chaos with the newborns. But we already knew that was, like, I guess the issue and our, like, area of complaints, and we talked about it in the book because we were like, why is it taking so long for them to realize that it's Victoria who's doing it? Who else would want to do that?
I know. One of the other things that were left out that I think is really important is the fact that Quill imprinted on Claire. If you don't read the books and you just, like, watch the movies, you're in for a shocker in the next movie, because they did not prepare you like they were supposed to.
And they didn't really cover much about imprinting at all. Like, Jacob talks about it a little bit, just saying that it's, like, a bond that's undescribable. And, like, he uses she, assuming that it's, like, the guys, the boy wolves, them, who are the ones doing the imprinting. But they don't talk about any of the other wolves who have already imprinted at this point. Jacob just mentions Sam, Leah, and Emily's, like, really weird love triangle type situation, but he doesn't talk about, like, Paul, who imprinted on, was it Paul? Quill, who imprinted
on, oh yeah,
baby.
Paul,
and then, like, somebody else who imprinted on, like, a classmate
or something. Oh yeah, on Kim.
Okay,
it's her name.
Yeah, so they, Jacob doesn't talk about the other wolves who have imprinted on somebody, and they also, in the movie, like Tori said, left out the part where Quill imprinted on a baby. Oh, which is
the director's be- like, I just really don't want to go there, so we're not going to.
But yeah, that is true. They did leave out that important detail, which is gonna come up in the next movie.
During the graduation scene, at first I thought it was really weird that Jess was making the valedictorian speech, because I thought that that was supposed to be Eric. But, like, I think it was a really good speech. I like that scene a lot. I think it, like, makes sense that Jess is sitting there like, hey guys, nothing's permanent. Now's the time to make mistakes. And then it just pans to Bella like, oh. Yeah.
I did like that scene. I also liked the speech that she said. In my head, I was like, wow, if I had the, because I didn't, when we graduated high school, I didn't opt to have a speech for our, like, graduation ceremony. But if I had, and I was thinking about Twilight, I totally would have just said Jess's speech.
Right. I don't know if this is true, but when I was looking up stuff for this episode, I came across something that said that they wanted her to do the speech because Anna Kendrick had been a Grammy nominated actress at that point, and they just wanted someone with accolades to have a bigger part, which makes sense.
But it's also Jessica's character as a whole in the whole movie is just iconic. Like,
yeah.
Of course you want to let her be the head speaker in the graduation ceremony.
Yeah, it was so good. It was such a good speech.
But I did like that detail that they added for the graduation scene. I also noticed, and this is like a little bit more just like movie focused, Bella is literally wearing a t-shirt.
Oh.
She wore a t-shirt to her graduation. I'm not surprised, but I'm also just like, why are you wearing a t-shirt to your graduation? Like in the book, she ends up wearing a dress because Alice makes her, right? Or am envisioning that?
I think so.
But of course, I saw that in the movie and I went, of course, Belle is wearing a blue t-shirt to her high school graduation. And then even in the after party, everyone, all her classmates are wearing like their nice dresses or whatever the case is for their outfit from graduation. And Bella just comes in with like a jean, like a denim shirt or something like that. And I'm like, of course she is.
The graduation party did not seem as fun as I expected. When I was reading it, I was thinking like a literal nightclub. They just put up a couple of like pink lanterns.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, where's the bass? Where's the loud music and the strobe lights?
They did not.
The aerial performers I was expecting?
No, I was expecting it to be more like a nightclub as well, but that certainly was not how the party ended up looking. Like, obviously, the party was more bearable than, say, like, Bella's birthday party from New Moon, but yeah, I don't know. The wedding's gonna make up for it in the next movie, but the party wasn't as like hyped up as I thought it would be based off of what we read in the book. So I wrote down, so it's a lot of notes of me being like, ah, oh, Rosalie's so pretty. I literally wrote Rosalie's name with hearts around it because I was just like,
you look so good in this movie. Rosalie's I literally so wrote pretty. Down that all of the Cullen women look so good in this movie, and the men look slightly busted, especially Edward.
Yes.
All of the men look so bad in this movie, and all of the Cullen women look glorious. I don't know why.
I kept getting very like distracted by Edward's sideburns.
Edward's sideburns and his eyebrows are a crime. They're so bad.
Meanwhile, I'm like over here just like gushing with love for Rosalie.
Rosalie looks so pretty.
I wrote a lot about how just pretty Rosalie looked in this movie. I also wrote down, there are a lot of like character differences. I think Charlie in this movie wasn't as like annoyed or angry with like Edward and Bella as he was in the book, so that made you like, I don't know, not feel as mad at Charlie in the movie version. So when Edward brings up the plane tickets to Florida while Charlie's there, like Charlie was supposed to blow up and be like, no, you're not allowed to go, but in the movie he's just like, oh great.
He was like, oh great, I love that.
Yeah.
Like a really flat voice. I was cracking up.
And then when Bella and Edward finally go to Florida to see Renee straight up tells Bella that she's not gonna visit her daughter in Alaska. And I was like, what the fuck? Renee says, but honey, if you go to school in Alaska, I'm never gonna see you. Like, I was like, how are you gonna tell your daughter that?
Very rude.
But I guess it's fitting for Renee's character, regardless if she's in the book or the movie.
Yeah, Renee's really odd. And she makes Bella a quilt in the movie, which I think is very weird and very uncharacteristic. She would never do that. She would never think enough of her daughter to be like, it's going to be cold when she goes to school in Alaska, so I'm going to make her a blanket.
But also, did they ever talk about in the previous books or even in the previous movies of Bella and her mom going on road trips in the past?
No.
So I think they just added that detail in to make it look like, oh, look at this mother and daughter relationship.
They're trying to make Renee seem like less of a shitty mom.
Mm-hmm.
But we know the truth.
We know the truth.
I hate when they add dumb shit like that when they could have just taken an extra 3 minutes and explained another part of the story a little more thoroughly so we could understand. But no, we have to see the Volturi just staring at Victoria, destroying things.
Just destroying things.
I don't get it.
Also, when they get into talking about, I guess, a little bit about Jasper's backstory, Jasper literally tells Bella that he had training with the Confederate Army. And Bella doesn't bat an eye. She doesn't look at him weird. She doesn't react.
Oh my God, this happened during the Civil War too. Exactly. She's like, oh my God, thank you for your service.
Bella, of all people, I would expect you to have some sort of reaction when you hear some information like this. But nope, Bella heard this and she was just like, oh my God, this was during the Civil War.
Speaking of Jasper, what is that accent? When he's telling his story, it changes 8 times. And then I was like, is he actually from the South? Does he really have an accent? Nope. Everyone on Reddit is very upset at his accent. Battle scars.
Battle scars. And when he talks about Alice finding him, he's just like, sorry about that, ma'am.
You had me waiting an awful long time, ma'am. 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 I hate it so much.
I think I'm going to name this episode Battle Scars.
Battle Scars, ma'am.
That's the episode named Battle Scars. But yeah, again, of course, I'm not satisfied with the whole fact that Jasper was a Confederate soldier. And even in the movie, they don't do anything about it. They just accept it as is, which is wild to me. Also, another detail, which just relates to I don't know, jokes that we've made on this podcast in particular. Guess how the new words get to Forks? Oh, they God. Swim there.
No!
I started cracking up the moment I saw Riley and the rest of the newborns rise out of the water. I went, they swam to Forks, didn't they? From Seattle, they swam to Forks. I don't actually know if there's a waterway, a body of water that connects the two. If there is, that's how they got there. And then the other thing that I had written down was, so when they go through the campsite, Bella is wearing the lightest jacket possible. And I know we talk about when we were discussing this in the book, why weren't they more prepared when they went to the campsite? Looking at it in the movie scene, I was like, Bella is not wearing a coat. And they knew a storm was coming. And I'm just like, I wonder why you were freezing that night. You weren't wearing enough clothing, you bitch.
I don't need a coat. I'm just built different, I guess.
Oh my God. And then Jacob has to come in and quote, save the day.
Yeah. Speaking of the whole tent scene and Bella and Jacob and everything, in the book, the only reason that Bella and Jacob kiss when they're by the tent or whatever is because he promises or insinuates that he'll stay if she kisses him. That doesn't happen in the movie. She just randomly kisses him out of nowhere with no context at all. It's very bizarre. If I didn't read these books, I would be wait, what? Why did she just do that? And I feel so bad for Edward. The look on his face when he finds out that Bella was like, Jacob, kiss me. The look on his face. I was like, oh my God, I feel so bad.
Dude, but she also wasn't as emotionally distressed. When we read about it in the book, she was constantly crying and Edward was always comforting her. But in the movie, that didn't really happen. Well, we already talked about how it wasn't as emotionally charged in the movie, but I feel like that takes away from the aggressiveness of it all.
Yeah, it definitely does. And I mean, I know we said this about the last movie too, but it is really just a watered down version of what happens in the book. He assaults her, but only in a very minor way. And it's just, they just dumb it down. Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen, but we know what happens.
We know what happens. Also, so in that scene when, I guess the second scene when Bella and Jacob kiss, but the one where Bella asks him to kiss her, I for some reason thought there would be it's not a flashback, because that would have meant it would happen in the past. I guess a vision of Bella and Jacob's future together, because that's what happens in the book. But for some reason in my head I thought they would do something similar in the movie.
I think there was supposed to be one, and I think it just got cut. I think I read somewhere that there was a scene like that and it just didn't make it, or they just didn't end up doing it.
Because that scene, that kiss scene happens, and because of the book, that was the quote moment that Bella thought or realized that she loved Jacob. But when it happens in the movie, you're there's no spark or nothing that signifies oh, here's the switch that Bella finally got to turn on to realize that she does love Jacob. Nope, that didn't happen.
Yeah, she just kisses him, and then Edward's like, you love him. And we're like, how did you get
that? Yeah, exactly. How did you come to that conclusion? So that didn't happen, even though I thought it was going to. The other thing is, I know we talked about in the past whether or not the wolves just end up being naked if they phase out into their wolf form and then phase back into human form. So when Jacob gets hurt by the newborn vampire that's left standing, not Bree, like another random newborn that's still alive. He like phases back into his human form, and the whole time I was watching, I was like, is he wearing clothes? Because I wanted to know if our theory was right. Do they like their clothes just tear off whenever they turn into a wolf? And so if they were to come back into a human, they're just like naked in the wool in the woods. And I think it is, because he definitely was wearing like longer shorts, and when he got hurt and turned into a human again, he was not wearing shorts.
That's embarrassing for him.
I was like, I saw more thigh than you were supposed to see. I guess that answers that question. They do face out of their clothes, ripped into pieces, and then if they face back, they're all naked.
Now, I have another question. When Edward touches Jacob's arm, this might be a dumb question, why is there no steam? He's ice cold. He's burning hot. When they collide, there's no steam, and I want to know why.
I should have heard some sounds. I did not.
I like couldn't help but think it anytime they were like touching. I was like, I want to sizzle.
Why isn't there any sizzling happening?
Also, why was Bella not wearing a cast after she punched Jacob and broke her hand? Or was she and I just missed it? Or
I don't think she was. There was also another thing, but this was like from so I watched the movie on Amazon, and they have like a little section for like trivia and random facts about the movie. So in the movie, Bella like takes a rock and cuts her arm to distract Victoria and Riley from like beating up Edward when Edward and Seth are having their little confrontation. So she's like bleeding from, you know, close to where her elbow area is on her forearm. But then after Seth and Edward have dealt with Riley and Victoria, Edward takes a piece of Bella's shirt and he ties it around her wrist. But that's not where she cut herself. And I watched the movie, that scene again, just to be like, wait, did that really happen? And it did. Bella clearly cut or like hurt her arm closer to her elbow. But when Edward tries to like help her afterwards, he ties the piece of cloth around her wrist, which is not where the blood's coming from.
Well, we know he didn't go to med school.
This is not, that's a mix. It's a goof. I think it could. So there was like a section for trivia in the movie, and then there was a section for goofs. And that was a goof.
I have another goof, maybe.
Maybe.
How is Edward able to graduate if he spent a majority of his senior year in Italy? How did he make this up?
I don't know. And it still bothers me that Jasper's still there. I was like, you were supposed to graduate, dude. What was the point of you being there?
Just for a sense of community, I guess.
I did write, so from the very beginning of the movie, because what would happen is I would watch the movie, and then like as the movie was going on, I would just write random notes. So the very, very beginning, I wrote that I thought that all the meadow scenes were kind of uncomfortable. Like, yes, it's supposed to be a romantic gesture that they're just spending time together in like a very scenic area, except for they're sitting in this meadow, but like, it's not very comfortable sitting in the ground for a long period of time. Like, why didn't they bring a picnic blanket or like something comfortable to sit on? And then even the way that they were sitting wasn't very comfortable. Like, it was awkward leaning, and I'm like, you can't possibly be spending, you know, long amounts of time staring at each other in these weird positions, right?
I always think that, how it's so weird that all they do is like sit in the meadow. Mm-hmm. Like, at least like hang out somewhere else.
Like, or if you're gonna be in the meadow, like make it comfortable, bring a blanket, read something.
Edward, this is not very gentlemanly of you.
And like, maybe I'm saying this because like when I'm reading, you know, the books for when we're going to do our summaries for the pod, if it's a nice day and I do go to the park, I'll bring like a picnic blanket to sit on or something, because it's comfortable. Watching those scenes in the movie, I'm like, this is awkward. Like, it's not comfortable. It's very awkward and things like that. And then even in the very, very beginning, one of the first words that Edward says to Bella is, so he says, marry me. And Bella just goes, no. Cracking up, because it reminds me of like that meme where you like, you just say no but with a heart emoji.
Yeah, that really was Bella. So no,
Edward's like, marry me, and she's like, no. I thought that was funny. And then another thing, where is the silver Volvo? Edward is,
I was thinking,
a silver Volvo. I was like, what is this giant Volvo? Where's the silver one? They don't explain it at all. I don't even recall there being a car change. Like, it's still a Volvo, but it's not silver, and it's not even a sedan. Like, it's like a van.
Yeah, it's weird.
It's a black Volvo van. And I'm like, where is this coming from? Why? Why is this what it is?
I just thought of another random thing.
Go for it.
There's a scene that's in the book, and I'm so sad that they left it out because I wanted to see it played out. When he pulls the metal rose off the bench. Yeah. Like, this is your virginity. Watch me crush it. It's ruined now. I wish they had left that in. When they were sitting on the bed, I was like, please, please do it. Please do it.
Oh. Did the bed frame even have roses on it, though?
No, I was very disappointed.
Like, the bed sheets or whatever it is had a gold color, but it wasn't full on gold, which is like something exaggerated in the book. But I'm pretty sure the bed frame doesn't have those metal black flowers or black roses as they talked about in the book. So that didn't happen.
Which I think if they had put that in, that would also have pled more into Edward's case for why he doesn't want to do it, which mm-hmm. is something important from the book. We should have just left out the Volturi. We could have had the bed rose virginity scene.
Why did they have to give Riley a backstory? Why did they have to sprinkle in the Volturi for no reason at all? They could have added other details.
Honestly, are we supposed to feel bad for Riley? Are we supposed to feel bad for him? Because his parents are like sitting there crying to Charlie, like, our son's missing.
Well, he dead though.
Oh.
He ain't coming back.
Also, speaking of that, whenever Charlie is looking at the stuff for Riley, Bella's just like, oh, don't you think they should just give up?
Yep.
Like, he knows, but she's just like, don't you think they should just give up? And he's like, well, I wouldn't. Why would you say that, Bella? What a weirdo. People are going to think you're a sociopath.
But also the flyers that they made for Riley, I don't know. It looks so old fashioned. And I'm like, this movie wasn't from that long ago. Like, why didn't it look more modern? But that's just me being nitpicky.
I saw like on a plot hole thing that there's a mess up on the actual flyer, and it says that he went missing in like May of 2010, but this is supposed to be taking place in June of 2010. So according to the flyer, he's been missing for a month. According to Charlie, he's been missing for a year, over a year. According to the timeline, it's probably been like 3 weeks.
There's a lot of miscommunication all throughout, it seems. So in the very beginning of the book, it talks about how, you know, Bella and Jacob aren't talking. And so they try to communicate through letters that are being passed through Billy and Charlie. Except for there's like a very, very little scene in the movie where like that letter's brought up. But it still cracks me up that, so Jacob's like trying to write his response to whatever the previous thing Bella says, except for he can't seem to come up with the right words. And so he crosses it out, except for he doesn't cross it out in the way that you can't read it. It's just like one line. And I'm just like, why did you leave that?
What's the point?
What was the point if you were like, no, I don't want to tell her this. Like, you still kept it so that it was easily readable for Bella, but nope. Also, she hid the letter in like her clothing drawer. And I'm like, why? It's not like your dad's going to be like, what is this, Bella? If anything, I don't think he'd care. He'd probably be like, yes, I'm glad you're talking to Jacob still, kind of thing. But nope, that's not what happened. So I did write down, this was one of the general trivia that came up while I was watching the movie. Apparently the previous Victoria actress was fired.
Mm-hmm. Because of a scheduling conflict.
That's such a weird way to say it, though.
I know. I actually have what she said about it here.
Ooh.
It said Rochelle, I don't know how to say her last name, Rochelle Lefevre, that's how I say it in my head, so we'll go with that. Rochelle, she said, I was fully committed to the Twilight saga and to the portrayal of Victoria. I turned down several other film opportunities and, in accordance with my contractual rights, accepted only roles that would involve very short shooting schedules. My commitment to Barney's version is only 10 days, although the production schedule for Eclipse is over 3 months long. Summit said they had a conflict during those 10 days and would not accommodate me. Given the length of filming for Eclipse, never did I fathom I would lose the role over a 10-day overlap. And that's what she said.
Oh my god.
I would be so pissed if I was her.
Yeah, I found it weird that it was worded that she was fired. Yeah. I was like, I mean, oftentimes if an actor or actress knows that there's a conflict in scheduling because they're working on other projects, it's like the actor or actress themselves opts to, you know, drop whatever previous thing that they were initially signed on for. But being fired by the company itself, I was like, Damn.
I know. And considering she was the perfect Victoria too, I really like Bryce Dallas Howard, who replaces her, but I don't like her for this role at all.
Yeah.
She's too sweet looking. Like, she looks too kind and like...
Also, I don't think... So, Victoria's like main characteristic is her like fiery red wild hair, but I feel like it didn't really look that way in the Eclipse movie. Like, they should have exaggerated it more, but that's not really the actress's fault. It's more like the styling team. I'm like, they should have made it like more wild and red, and maybe it's a coloring kind of thing in post-production, but I don't know. I feel like they could have made it more Victoria.
Yeah, I agree. The costuming department just dropped the ball on that one.
They really struggled. I was trying to remember how the book ended, because the movie ending was like, I don't know, I felt like there was more that could have been done but wasn't. But I need to remember how the book ends. Obviously, it's Bella going, oh, I think we should have the wedding, I gotta tell Charlie, but like...
I'm like reading the last page before the epilogue, and she's saying like, we gotta go tell Charlie. So I guess maybe it did end the same way.
Oh, well, so the only thing that I was gonna say is that Bella and Edward are in the meadow again, and they're talking about, you know, the wedding, and Bella finally is like, has come to her senses and is like, I want to tell everyone that we're getting married. Except for Bella goes into this like little spiel saying that she never felt like she belonged anywhere and always felt left out, and so she's like felt more comfortable living in Edward's world. Yeah. Which, like, overall, when I saw that scene in the movie, I was like, this sounds very like, I'm not like other girls kind of thing. I couldn't remember if the book ended that way. I didn't think it did, because I was a little bit annoyed when I saw that scene in the movie.
Ending of the book is Edward randomly trying to have sex with Bella and her being like, oh, no. Yeah. And he's like, why not? Now's as good as ever. What?
Oh, yeah.
I'm glad they just cut that. That was weird.
And it's like, let's have sex in this meadow right now. You want to be turned into a vampire? Let's do it today. But in the movie ending, Bella's like, I'm not like other girls. I'm not like other girls. I belong in the vampire world.
Yeah, Bella is very, like, pick me, I'm not like other girls, and a random note I have about costuming is the pants that Edward is wearing in the, like, training scene, those are karate pants, and I just think that's hilarious. They're literally karate pants that they took in the crotch just ever so slightly.
What the heck? So it'd be easier for
them. Yeah, the costume designer was like, Robert really wanted to wear these karate pants, and I really didn't think they were going to go for it, but they said okay, and he's wearing the karate pants.
What on earth? That's interesting. I know in the last movie review for New Moon, we talked about, like, the differences in coloring, but I didn't really get a sense of, I don't know, any major thing to talk about for Eclipse.
Yeah, the coloring wasn't very different, but it felt almost, like, more cinematic.
Yeah, like, yeah, I think I know what you mean.
And it's probably because it was a higher budget. And I also thought that the same director for New Moon also did Eclipse, but I was wrong.
There was another general trivia for that. And the director from New Moon was also offered to be the director for Eclipse, except he got the notice like so close to while he was still working on New Moon. He's like, I can't take on Eclipse. And I was like, why were they? Obviously, we know that it's like the time is money thing, so they were like, we need to put all these movies out like immediately. But I don't know, you had these directors who were willing to film or to, you know, be the director for the next movie, but because of the timeline, like, they were going so quickly that the directors like literally could not do it. They're like, yeah. I'm barely getting through the movie that we're on right now, and you want me to already be working on the next movie? Like, that's not possible kind of thing. But there's still, again, yeah, are a lot of people who worked on the previous movies that were still working on, you know, still working on the movies, like the screenplay writer and, you know, just other people who were involved in the production team were still involved in the production team for the following movies for the Twilight series. I don't know. But yeah, that's what it said. So he was offered it, offered the director role again for Eclipse, but he didn't take it because he was like, oh, there's not enough time. I can't do it.
I mean, I understand. I would be tired. Another director that was up for the part of being the job of being director was Drew Barrymore.
Oh.
Could you imagine if Drew Barrymore had directed this movie? I think that would have been great.
I don't know what Drew Barrymore has worked on in the past. In terms of
me either. I just love Drew Barrymore.
Directorship director.
I just liked Catherine Hardwicke doing it. I think I would like the perspective of a woman once again.
I do too.
I love Drew Barrymore. I mean,
we talked about that in our Twilight review and our New Moon review. We miss Catherine Hardwicke.
And I didn't know who this director David Slade was, really. And I looked him up, and I guess he does some horror movies, which I don't really know about. But he directed the Black Mirror Bandersnatch movie.
Oh, what?
I was very shocked. I was like, okay, Bandersnatch. He also did one of the worst Black Mirror episodes, arguably, Metalhead, the one with the robot dog. Oh. But Bandersnatch, okay. I was like, all right, David.
Redemption arc. There's David's redemption arc.
I just thought it was so funny. Like, the guy that directed Eclipse did the Black Mirror movie. Interesting. That was just a fun little tidbit I came across.
So this movie definitely had more action scenes. If they were good action scenes, I don't know. I don't really have anything to compare it to. Definitely better than New Moon, in my opinion. But that might be because of the cinematography. Like, I feel like they just were able to film it better with, like, higher production. But, I mean, I guess the action scenes look nicer in Eclipse than they did in New Moon.
Like, it was really action-packed. It felt like that was what they were trying to get across in the book, but they just didn't. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the fighting didn't look that good, but I mean, you know. It was there. It was better than New Moon.
Yeah, it's not like how in New Moon's movie they just threw a fight scene with the Volturi, even though that didn't happen. It's always with the Volturi. Why do they keep trying to add the Volturi in this storyline?
I think this movie is pretty decent standalone. Like, if you took it out of the saga and just, like, had it as a movie, I feel like it wouldn't be that bad.
Yeah, I think you could try to piece together, you know, what's happening if you didn't read the books. But it's funny that, like, if you talk about the books, Eclipse is the one that you're like, why did they do this?
Yeah, I think from a book to movie adaptation, this one really sucks. But if it had just been a movie, like if Twilight was just a movie series and didn't have books, it would be fine. Mm-hmm.
Another thing I noticed, and this is more of the like character styling from in the movie. I have no idea why this is, but Bella's hair was like kind of flat in Eclipse. You know what I mean?
It was a wig.
Well, that would explain it.
Yeah, she had a black mullet. She was filming the Joan Jett movie. Yeah, it was a wig.
I was like, why does Bella's hair look so flat? Because if you compare it to her hair in the other movies, like, it was definitely more voluminous. But in this movie, it was almost like this should have been the New Moon hair, because she was supposed to be really sad in New Moon. But nope. Her hair was just really flat. It was also very dark brown, which isn't really how her hair is in the rest of the movie and the other movies, but that would explain it. She was wearing a wig. I probably should have looked that up, but I didn't.
I think I surprisingly got everything out.
Wow. I think I did too. It's funny because at the beginning of this recording, we were like, honestly, there isn't much to say.
I know, and we've been going for like an hour.
I mean, I tend to cut it down, so it's probably going to be like a little less than an hour.
All right, what kind of final thoughts do you have?
Would I watch this movie again? I don't know. I've said before that the first Twilight movie is my favorite, and that still holds true. Like, Eclipse was definitely more bearable than New Moon as a movie, but I don't know. It wasn't that standout-ish that I'd be like, oh yeah, I would willingly watch this again. I watched it twice a second time today because I just wanted to make sure that I could remember what I saw the first time I watched the movie in this like rewatch that we're doing, but that was for like detail's sake, not so much that I wanted to see it again. Plus, my rental was still available, so I'm like, oh, might as well get my money's worth. So I watched it a second time. I mean, the movie's okay. I don't know if I would be like, oh, let's watch Eclipse. I would definitely say that with the first Twilight movie, though. Let's go watch Twilight again. I miss the Volvo, though. The silver Volvo.
We miss the Volvo.
We miss the Volvo. Rosalie is still really pretty.
That was literally just my closing thoughts. My final thoughts are literally just, it was fine, and Rosalie looks so good.
Like, they should have taken out more from the Volturi scenes, and they just added more about Rosalie's storyline. That's all I wanted.
We want more of Rosalie in her wedding dress, killing men.
Yes, causing havoc. Getting her revenge. That's what I wanted.
As she should.
Do you have any other thoughts other than Rosalie?
No, that's head empty just Rosalie.
I was just about to say that. Head empty just Rosalie. Well, that sounds good to me. I think that's a good way to end our movie review. For our next episode of the podcast, we're actually going to be reading a book before we start reading Breaking Dawn, which is the spin-off Eclipse novella titled The Short Second Life of Bree Tanner. It's a really short book, maybe a little over 200 or so pages. So that's, you know, enough content for us, I guess, to talk about in an episode. Maybe if Tori and I decide that there's actually more for us to talk about, it might be a two episode kind of summary or review. I don't know. Well, we haven't read it yet, so I have no idea what to look forward to. Like I said, I thought that Bree Tanner survived after the battle, but obviously after reading Eclipse again, I realized that the Volturi killed her. So I don't know what this book's gonna be about.
Shall find out, and you will too, everybody.
Yay! Good thing you don't have to read it, because we're gonna read it for you.
Isn't that convenient?
We're like the Spark Notes, but for the Twilight series. Not that I expect any school to ever cover Twilight books in their English classes. Could you imagine how weird that'd be?
I was on like the Eclipse like Spark Notes thing, and there was a comment, or maybe it wasn't Spark Notes, but it was something like that, and there was a comment, and I was like, is this real? I need it for an assignment. I was like, are there really kids doing this? What? For an assignment?
Well, I remember when we were reading through the first Twilight book, in the book that I lent you, there were like questions in the back. So I can understand if there were some sort of reading comprehension related for the first book. I couldn't imagine there being such a thing for the rest of the Twilight series, but I could be wrong.
Whose teacher is making their kids read this?
I really don't know. And I'm a little scared to look into it, but maybe that's something we can talk about in a future episode. But that being said, I think that pretty much ties up this week's episode. Thank you for listening, and remember to tune in every other Monday as we fall right back into our Twilight obsession like it's 2008 again.
You can find Calling the Shots on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and your usual podcasting platforms.
Come sit with us next time at lunch for more of our sparkling personalities. Bye.
I love you, Rosalie.